everyone. Welcome back to Bitcoin Banter. I've got Tony and Rick with me. We've got a lot of news to cover, guys, so let's just jump right in here. First on the list, we have Magoo tweeted out about Plan B. You probably remember him. He laid out a scenario whereby we get to $1 million Bitcoin sometime in the back half of next year. And Magoo said, we haven't even hit his 2021 target. Now he's calling for $1 million Bitcoin next year. Rick, you stumbled across this. Why don't you give your thoughts first?
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely crazy, isn't it? So, you know, as Magoo rightly points out, Plan B is calling for $1 million Bitcoin by 2025. And I'm not going to be the guy who suggests that he isn't, you know, we're not going to hit those numbers, right? It could absolutely happen. But what's quite funny and what I think is worth pointing out is that, look, you know, we missed his target in 2021. And, you know, there's multiple people now building sort of models where they try and predict the value of Bitcoin into the future. Like you guys might have seen, like we've also got someone who runs around now calling themselves Plan G, and they have a power law model. And then just the other day when I was floating around Twitter, I noticed there was another character who calls himself Plan C. And guess what? He's got his own Bitcoin model of where the price is going to go as well. And look, I just want to go through like really quickly, like that we showed that tweet briefly, but I want to go through Plan B's actual scenario that I'm looking at here. Right. Because it's quite ridiculous. Yeah. Like, I love the way that he starts with a premise that this is just a scenario. OK, so first off, he thinks in October there'll be it's going to pump just because it's October and it's a classic pump month. I'm like, wow, that's some really amazing analysis there. Well done. Then we've got November. Trump wins the election and ends the Biden administration war on crypto. Well, again, now he's also predicted the results of an entire election. Okay, so that's the second layer of probability he's added to his scenario. Then, oh, in December, we're going to have some massive ETF inflows, which will push Bitcoin to 150K. Again, I mean, this guy's crystal ball must be absolutely unbelievable, right? Like, where does he get this information from? And then, oh, in January, very swiftly after, loads of companies are going to return to the US in the Bitcoin space, and we're at 200K. And then my favorite bit in the middle here is then he says with his, so this guy has this competing model, the power law. And so Plan B has worked this other guy's model into his new model, which is the people who follow the other model are going to sell in February. I mean, it's just ridiculous. And then March, all right, we're not done. Bhutan, Argentina, and Dubai are going to make it legal tender, and then we'll be at 300K. And then, yeah, April, Trump's going to start stacking Bitcoin. In May, all the other countries are going to join in. And then June, out of nowhere at all, there's going to be several AI startups that start using Bitcoin to autonomously arbitrage traditional finance, which is just, I mean, it's just waffle. It's just words at this point. And then my favorite bit is the last bit. In July and December, we'll have face-melting FOMO, which will push us to $1 million. What I love about that is that we didn't have face melting FOMO at 400K or 300K or any of these numbers before. So the only thing I think he's not covered in this scenario is if aliens come from another planet and also start stacking Bitcoin. And if that happens, you know, next January, then God knows where the price will be. I mean, these people, right, like you're just making stuff up. Like, let's just call it what it is. I could come up with a model as well that explains how Bitcoin's price will go up and to the right for the next forever, right? And come up with, I mean, I love that he prefaces that it's a scenario, right? And look, the reason I'm giving him such a hard time is because I think all these models and all this ridiculous analysis does a real disservice to the rest of the community because, you know, what it does is, first and foremost, it encourages people to try and trade Bitcoin, which is a really fast way to lose your stack and get your ass handed to you. And the second thing is, you know, these people are still looking at Bitcoin like it's a speculative asset, right? And once you've learned enough, you realize, no, this is just a superior form of money. So it's not there to speculate on, it's there to save in and use as your unit of account. So, you know, lots of people, I'm sure, have been wrecked by Plan B's crazy predictions, which have never come right so far, by the way. And I'm pretty sure that they're going to get wrecked again. But look, it's 2024 now. So if you don't like the plan B, maybe you go for plan G or plan C. And who knows? So yeah, that's my view on these crazy predictions is just ignore the noise, stay humble, stack sats. No one can predict the future.
Yeah. Tony, what do you think?
What do you mean? You don't have a plan R, Rick? Or maybe I should have a plan T for, plan Rick and Tony. Well, there's no lack of
Yeah,
entertainment on Twitter with all sorts of magical predictions and rubbish of that sort. Rule number one, you never trade Bitcoin. Rule number two, you never listen to clowns that make these sorts of predictions. Bitcoin will reach $1 million, that's for sure. But in order for it to do this, it has to suck in the liquidity of other assets, right? In order for it to go up to $1 million. When that'll happen, who knows? Maybe it'll happen in a month, maybe it'll happen in a year. I don't know. I mean, the classic example of this is how did Apple hit $1 trillion, so soon after to release the iPhone? Well, for Apple to hit $1 trillion, there were like 10 or 12 phone companies that went out of business. So all the money from all of these bankrupt companies flowed into Apple's iPhone, which brought it up to a $1 trillion company. So for Bitcoin to get to $1 million, it must suck the money out of something else, and money finds its way flowing into Bitcoin, which I believe it will, because there's nothing as valuable and scarce and incorruptible as this asset. The only problem with Bitcoin is there's still too many people that don't understand it and treat it like a speculative asset, whereas it's the complete opposite of that. So ignore the silly noise, just stack sats, hold it in self-custody, everything will be just fine.
Yeah, Tony, I think you hit on an important point there, and that is that, money's going to need to leave other asset classes to flow into Bitcoin, assuming we don't rely 100% on increased liquidity and money printing and that all flows in, but some of that will also flow into other asset classes. And I think the second point you made there is that there still needs to be a knowledge and an understanding of why to put those dollars or any fiat currency into Bitcoin. And I think we still have a long ways to go on that. I mean, I was talking with a friend of mine who's a financial advisor just the other day, and I mean, we talked about Bitcoin for like a minute and, just shut down completely. He had nothing to say about it. His base case is it's a speculative asset and that's all it is. And I have to imagine that 98% of people in his role who are the ones helping guide clients and make those decisions for small businesses and so on and so forth, they all feel the same way. So they're just, Rick, I mean, back to the point you made, there are so many unknowns about global liquidity, about adoption, about so many variables that it's silly. I agree with you, Tony. We're going to a million someday, but when we get to a million, that might only be worth $200,000 in today's purchasing power. And so who really cares what the nominal figure is? Someday I obviously do believe it'll be worth $1 million in today's value, but we'll see. This is, yeah, it's just, it gets silly. It's fun to talk about, but I think the problem is it misleads too many people, and people get burned because of these sorts of predictions and models that just aren't going to work out in the long run. Hey there, just a really quick break from Bitcoin Banter, and we'll be right back. Wanted to remind you that we, the Bitcoin Way, are the leaders in achieving self-sovereignty, whether it's self-custodying your Bitcoin properly and securely, protecting your online life and keeping it private, or even coming up with a plan B option in the event you would need to move yourself or your family elsewhere. Go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast to schedule a few minutes to learn more from a member of our team. We hope to see you soon. Okay, up next we've got so this is the Tornado Cash case. So the long story short here is that the Roman Storm was trying to get the case dismissed and saying that anything he wrote the code and that anything that happened subsequently criminally was beyond his purview or knowledge or ability to influence. And they basically said no. He does not need to be guilty of or involved in any of these. They didn't have to allege that Mr. Storm was aware of the specific nature of, much less a participant in, the underlying criminal activity. So I think the CEO of every major car company is going to be in jail for DUIs that happen on a daily basis. Tony, why don't you take this one first?
This is the most absurd and ridiculous thing I've ever seen, and it just confirms that there is no legitimate justice system, especially in the US when this rubbish takes place. There is no justice system. This is a bunch of crazy people inventing things as they go along. By that definition, you should arrest, the manufacturers of almost every product. Why don't you put the people who create forks and knives, put them all in jail? Or chairs, like, oh my God, somebody smashed this chair on somebody's head and killed him. Now he's a terrorist or he's a criminal as well. Anything can be turned into a weapon, So why focusing on this guy? Well, the reason why they're focusing on this guy is because he's diving into a project that directly attacks the money, which is the product of the government. So he's impacting their ability to steal by helping people preserve their wealth. That's why they're attacking him. It's not they're attacking because he's a criminal. He hasn't done anything wrong. The real criminals are protecting their turf. This is what's going on with this. And they're trying to pin this poor guy, put him up on the stake, to sort of like make him an example of God knows what. Hopefully, this whole thing, some legitimate judge by some fluke miracle exists out there that throws this case out and dismisses it completely. Otherwise, this is going to set an extremely dangerous precedent that whose outcome is I don't know, man. It's scary and unknown, but we'll see. I'm choosing to be optimistic, but it's absolutely appalling that we even have to read and witness something like this in this day and age. As far as I'm concerned, it just cements my conviction in what I've already assessed 4 or 5 years ago, that we are living in a criminal organized world, nothing else. And in order to protect yourself, you have to destroy that model, opt out of it completely, and replace it by one that is incorruptible. There is no other workaround.
Yeah, Rick.
Yeah, I mean, what an absolute shocking state of affairs this is, right? So, for the listeners who might not know much about Tornado Cash, like I guess it's all based on Ethereum, right? So I'm no expert in it. I have no real interest in Ethereum, as I know you guys don't either. But ultimately, the guy built Tornado Cash, and it was a way to sort of mix your funds and gave you some privacy over your transactions and all that sort of stuff. And what this judge is coming out with is absolutely ludicrous. I mean, it says to be guilty, the defendants need not be guilty of or involved in or even aware of any money laundering happening. So, I mean, even that logic just doesn't make any sense, does it? To be guilty of something, you don't need to be guilty of it. What? Like, hang on a minute, right? Like, this is totally illogical, right? And like Tony says, he's being punished for producing some code. Now, some criminals have gone and maybe used that code to do whatever nefarious things they're trying to do. That's absolutely nothing to do with the guy who wrote the software. I'm sure hackers use Windows PCs, and I'm sure they use Macs, and I'm sure they use all sorts of different tools. It's like someone might rob my house with a transit van, but that's not Ford's fault for building a transit van, is it? Like it's the criminal's fault. So, you've got to ask yourself, well, clearly this is illogical to anybody that sits and thinks clearly and rationally, right? So how are they getting away with this? Well, they're getting away with it because, like Tony says, the judicial system is just a joke, and they're using it to attack people like this because those are the people that are trying to build tools that enable you to transact privately with one another. And that's desperately what they don't want. And you know what? This is just the thin end of the wedge, really. Like you can see it across the whole industry, right? So, let's talk about exchanges, right? You have to KYC everything, right? Because they want to know exactly how much Bitcoin you own, what you do with it. They want to track it. Then you have collaborative custody companies, right? Okay, so they can help you secure your Bitcoin with multisig, but they are going to want to KYC you and monitor everything that you do. you know, it's all heading in that direction. And, you know, the banks are coming in to custody your Bitcoin. The ETFs want to hold the Bitcoin for you. The idea that you're going to hold your money and transact privately with other individuals is what really, really terrifies the state. So, you know, they've gone after Tornado Cash. Obviously, we all know that they've gone after the Samurai devs as well. And, you know, that's a very similar scenario to the Tornado Cash one, which is, you know, they're being prosecuted again for building a tool that could potentially be used for criminal activity, but it's also just code, right? They're not engaged in the criminal activity. So it's just another attack on privacy. And I think it's good that we're all mindful of it and talking about it, right? Because everyone's so focused on Plan B's million-dollar price predictions that they're losing focus on what's really important here. The whole point is we want to transact freely. You know, and everyone's circle jerking about how rich they're going to get and not realizing that, you know, the enemy is at the gate and they're trying to get in and they're trying to prevent you from really achieving your freedom. And we're not there yet. We haven't finished yet. This isn't just about getting rich, it's about getting free.
Well said. And you can understand why Satoshi Nakamoto remained anonymous in light of recent affairs. I think he probably had incredible foresight on what was to come and understood what he was building. Okay, we've got they're teeing us up for a rigged election here in the US. So a massive scandal in Arizona. 200 almost a quarter of a million voters wrongly marked as having provided proof of citizenship due to an error. How convenient. And they're still going to be able to vote in the general election, even though they didn't provide proof of citizenship. Tony, why don't you take this one first?
Well, it's very clear to me that they're going to do anything under the sun to try to steal this election, to fraudulently try to win a like a cement a vote, like a win for them. You know, we just have to keep exposing these things. I mean, this is surreal, you know, that it's gotten this pathetically, blatantly obvious. And you know, it just carries on. It's like every week there's something, you know, that tops last week's event. And you know, until when is this going to go on before we see a real reaction from the people? I mean, who can put an end to this other than the people? You know, if you just complain about it, nothing really changes. Yes, you're announcing, you're talking about it, but fundamentally, it's still going on. So there has to be something's got to give. This is what stresses me out, and what worries me is when these things continue to escalate like this. At some point, you know, there's a point of no return and something breaks. This is what happened in Beirut, you know, when that idiot suggested it was a good idea to tax a WhatsApp conversation. You see, it wasn't something sophisticated. It was just something as moronic as that that blew up the whole country. So when I read stories like this and I see events take place, well, they're just as moronic, right? And they keep escalating every time. They push it further and further. And at some point, it's going to blow up. And when that blows up, that's where things get extremely dangerous. And that's what worries me, specifically in the US, given the number of the population size and the amount of people that are privately armed in the US.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, these are, I think this is the sort of story that you see that if, you know, and again, my intention here is not to get political or to choose sides, but I think if Trump doesn't win the election, I think a lot of people are going to look back at these sorts of stories that are, you know, maybe you kind of brush off right now or aren't highly, or aren't produced and published in mass. And they're going to look back and see this stuff and be really pissed off, you know, because whether or not he should or shouldn't have won the election in a fair election is beside the point. The point was we didn't even get that chance to have a fair election. Rick, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I don't like wading into US politics too much because I don't know that much about it. But you know, I think the reason we wanted to highlight this today was just like, look how crazy things are getting, right? And I think your point is really important, which is the way I see it from an outsider looking in at US politics is that in my mind, there is absolutely zero chance of this election not being contentious in one direction or the other, right? The way I see it, looking from the outside, is if Trump wins, all the Democrats are going to claim that it was a stolen election. And vice versa, if the Democrats win, all the Republicans are going to say that it's a stolen election. So in my mind, kind of like regardless of who wins, there's going to be this huge amount of animosity surrounding it. And this sort of stuff that we're seeing with, what do you mean a quarter of a million voters, like we just recorded them, are not eligible to vote, but we're going to let them vote and worry about it and sort it out after the fact. Like, this is crazy, and it's going to piss people off, understandably, right? So, like you say, whatever happens, there's going to be a real divide in America and people being quite upset at each other. And so I think it's important for a business like us to not get into the politics of it, but mention it and say, well, look, as a reasonable, rational individual, if you're watching this play out and you're in the US or even anywhere else, just look at how messy things are now and how antagonistic they are. And think about, okay, so look, I have very little control over any of this stuff, right? It's outside of me. I can't find a way as an individual to fix these election rigging accusations and all the craziness. So what can I do? Where do I have agency? Well, there are a couple of places you have agency. Number one, you can adopt Bitcoin, and then you're using money that's outside of this clown show and complete circus. That's a great start. And then also, if you are worried about your physical security because you have no idea if this is going to turn into some full-blown civil war, well, that's where you start looking at things like Plan B residencies. And, like, look, no one wants to run away. Like, I get it, right? I don't want to leave my hometown and my friends and my family. But also, no one wants to live through a civil war either. So, looking at things like Plan B residency as like an insurance product. Right? You buy insurance on your house, you buy insurance on your car in case something goes wrong. What about insurance on the place that you're living? It's as simple as that. And if you've got a family and kids and that sort of thing and you're not thinking about that, I think the message is, right, don't get too sucked in. Most people are going to have a side in this fight, right? Either Republican or Democrat. How do you back yourself and say, well, regardless of what happens, what is my setup and what are my plans for protecting myself? Because it's all looking a little bit messy, a little bit hairy, right?
Couldn't agree more. All righty, last one for you. We've got so the Federal Communications Commission has approved, this is, by the way, just a new battle in the war on free speech. They've approved the expedited sale of over 200 radio stations to the kind, generous man that is George Soros and his investment firm. Rick, you are living in the land of no free speech. What are your reactions to this?
Well, the first thing I'd like to say is that Keir Starmer, our Prime Minister, is an absolute criminal through and through, and he should be absolutely kicked out of office immediately, and we should just govern ourselves. But let's move on to George Soros, right? It's nice for me to exercise some free speech, right? Because I'm not listening to these guys. Let's talk about George Soros then, right? So he's what's crazy about this story? Well, there's a few things. Number one, I find it quite funny that he wants to control the narrative and the media, and his method that he's chosen is to buy radio stations.
He's
Like,
old.
man, in the 1950s, yeah, maybe, man, yeah, like I, but like, yo, hey, do you have a phone? Do you have the internet? Like, what, I'm not sure. I'm not sure that Elon Musk is going to spend all night thinking how he's going to deal with this new competitor, is what I'm saying. But George Soros, right? What's weird about this? What's really weird about this is, and I again, it's an American system, so I don't fully understand it. But I did a little bit of reading, right? And what I understand is that, like, see if you're trying to buy like media companies in the U.S., but you have over 25% foreign ownership, then you're meant to go through some process where you go and get approval from like the FCC, and you have to go through all these things. And if the foreign ownership is high enough, maybe even special executive branches of the US government get involved, or national security to check that some foreign agency isn't going to influence your media and all that sort of stuff. But it seems like in this case, George Soros just walked in and just said, yeah, I'm going to buy these 200 radio stations. And everyone just said, okay. And there was no process or anything like that. So it's despicable. Again, thankfully, I'm just not sure that many people listen to the radio. So maybe we don't need to worry too much.
Well, first of all, Rick, I'm always worried when we're talking and someone's going to kick down that door behind you and haul you away while we're recording. And The second thing I'd add is I hear you. I have a feeling though that there's a generation that is, you know, nearing retirement that's still listening to radio on the way to work. And those are some of the people I think who are probably, you know, like younger baby boomers who are still influential in, you know, elections and have a, you know, a decent sized voting block. So yeah, well, maybe it's, you know, a 5% impact that can go a long way, say, you know, versus, you know, normal cable news or independent media or what have you. But Tony, what are your reactions to George Soros?
No, I agree with both of you. It's a little funny because, yeah, like you said, like who still listens to the radio? Who even has a radio? Like I haven't had a radio in my house for over 20 years. You know, for me, it's like a vintage collector's item. But considering how old this clown is, it wouldn't like it was a bit of a, like a vintage act. Maybe you're right, though. Maybe there is a tiny percentage of people with money of his age that still listen to that archaic technology. And maybe they think they're still influential. But I don't know, man. I can't really comment more on this. But it just sheds even more light and raises more questions. Is there any legitimate organization in the United States? I mean, you have to ask yourself these things. Wherever you look, whether it's a judicial one, whether it's a medical one, whether it's an educational one, whether it's this FCC, is there any institution on like a government level in the U.S. that is not corrupt? Name them. Put them on a list.
It doesn't feel that way.
Right?
Yeah. So, the incentives are just so misaligned.
It's mind-blowing. And so, you know, as I'm not an American citizen, but I can just imagine like the mindset of an American citizen, like don't you wake up in the morning and ask like, what the hell, man? Like what happened to our country? How did this get like so laughably bad? And what are we going to do about it? Voting left and right is not going to change anything or solve anything. You can't remove one dirtbag and replace him by another and expect a miracle to happen. You fundamentally, the root of all of this clown show is the money. That's where people need to be focused on. It's not, oh, I like him more than him or her more than her. All of that shit is garbage. Restrip them of the power of money, all of them. And miraculously, you'll see how they all start doing their job, right? Because now they're held accountable to their decisions. Good behavior is rewarded. Bad behavior, you're shown the door, right? So, I don't know, man. Crazy times.
Yeah. No, I think you're absolutely right. The one thing I'll add to that is it's like, you know, you hear about, I don't think it's 10 guys in a room making all the decisions and pulling levers around the world and, you know, but to the extent that some of this is orchestrated, you know, in smaller pockets of government or people of power, they've done it an incredible job of making us fat, unhealthy, complacent, and distracted. And I just look at like so many people in my life. Fortunately, most of the people in my life aren't fat and unhealthy, but they're very distracted, many of them, right? Like the game's on and they want to check scores and do their fantasy football thing and all this stuff. And when you piss your time away on those sorts of things, you don't have time to learn and to dive into some of this stuff. It's like that classic meme, like, oh, that's crazy. Did you catch the game last night? It's like that's most people's lives. That's their MO. And it's unfortunate. It's sad, but I think it's just, you got to reach that max pain and then they'll take action. As long as they can feed their family, they can enjoy their bread and circus. It's going to be really hard to see change, but hopefully our conversations and many others like us and people who are doing like true independent investigative journalism can get through to more and more people. And then they can have conversations around the dinner table. And at least we, you know, we plant seeds for, you know, an awakening. So time will tell, but gentlemen, that's what we've got for today. For everyone listening, thanks as always for tuning in. Check out the Bitcoin Way. We've got, as Rick alluded to, Plan B residency to citizenship programs. We help you secure and custody your Bitcoin the right way, no counterparty risk. We help you with online privacy and security. We can help you with setting up a privacy phone, which is a really good idea in this day and age. Go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast, and we'd love to schedule some time with you to chat and tell you a bit more about what we do. Gentlemen, thank you guys for your time. We'll catch up again in a few days.
Thank you, Michael. See you later.
Thanks.
Cheers, guys.